against you later.
Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Leanne.
If y'all will help me open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and are up on the main flight of stairs across the hall. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of its simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry the clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And this is the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. They may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing the first part of step 12. Next week, we'll carry over with the last part of step 12. Tonight I'm going to read the first paragraph, which is on page 89, and then our panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. And tonight I want to introduce Jill and Keith. They're both here tonight. And we're going to start on page 89. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives.
Jill? Okay, I'm Jill, I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Jill.
And the very first sentence that really strikes me in this is, carry this message to other alcoholics. I've had a lot of experience in prior years of carrying a message, but not necessarily this message. And I got so far off track. So what this is telling me, I'm just supposed to come out and give back my experience. And I just have to depend. God's going to put people in front of me, And I just have to learn, this is a part of the spiritual principle. I have to learn to tell the truth. I have to tell my experience, not borrow your experience and try to embellish on it. So this has been a little bit of a challenge a few times for me. But as I've done this, what happens is I get to see other people. And the newcomer that's put in front of me, I get to see myself mirrored back at me. Because a lot of times I haven't been able to really see myself clearly. And this whole fellowship really makes me realize why one alcoholic talking to another can get through, got through to me like nothing else did. When I first got sober, I was a mess. I was a bad drunk, and I was a mess. And my home group didn't really know what to do with me a lot of times. Actually, some of them were taking bets that I wouldn't make it because I was such a nut. But my sponsor knew that if you could get me to be connect with another person, my chances were going to be tenfold better. And they had me start visiting an old timer in a nursing home. And he had been sober 40-something years at the time. And whatever happens in here, one drunk talking to another, it got through that barrier of my alcoholism that I had built for years upon years. And I could hear what he was telling me. I finally started identifying with what was being said in these rooms. Always before, I had just compared myself out. And I can remember, he died that year too, and the neatest thing he said to me, I can remember sitting there saying, "Bob, I don't think I'm gonna make it." He goes, "Girl," because he now could remember my name, he always goes, "Girl, you keep doing what you're doing and you're gonna be okay." And you know, he's right. It's, when I'll try making an attempt, at times, sometimes it hasn't even been a great attempt, but when I make an attempt to give this back, I do all right. I do okay. And the neatest thing today is some heroes in this room. Some of them have been here a long time, and some have been here a very short time. And it's been the sheer joy of my life watching them and being part of all of this. The fellowship that grows up around us is probably closest friends I've ever had. The best relationships I've ever had with people have been in these rooms. Thanks, that's all I have.
Thanks, Jim. Thank
you. My name is Keith Gillette, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm sober today through the grace of God, which I found by taking these steps, and I feel honored to be able to share with you a little bit of my experience with the 12-step. It tells me that practical experience shows nothing will ensure immunity from drinking. As intensive work with other alcoholics, you know, it's got a lot of definite words in there. You know, nothing that I'm going to do inside or outside is going to ensure me immunity from alcohol as intensive work with other alcoholics. Man, that's all I got to do. You know, I could sit around and pray all day long, but if I'm not working with alcoholics, I'm not doing what that thing tells me, which is about 100 men and women's experience as to how they got this deal. You know, but I'm going to try something else until I get to this point anyways. Yeah, I'm going to try to get a hobby. I'm going to try to go to a bunch of different meetings. I'm going to try to hang out after the meetings, before the meetings. But I'm not going to, you know, immediately try to do this intensive work with other alcoholics. I'm going to do that when all other measures fail. You know, because why? You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, that still is the root of my troubles today. And I will go to this, you know, at the end, not the beginning. It works when other activities fail. And my experience says that I've tried other activities. I've tried getting involved in other things, you know, and it doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't solve what's going on inside me, the need for ease and comfort. You know, it doesn't happen. But when I work with another alcoholic, it does. You know, and even when I'm telling a guy or gal that I'm sponsoring that this is what they should be doing and I'm not doing it, you know, it drives me crazy that I get to that same point just like they do, where my sponsor comes and says, "Keith, why don't you go to a meeting and find somebody to work with and see what happens? See what happens." Many times that I've done, you know, I used to be married, you know, and I lived in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I'd be walking around that house fit to be tied, you know, and I'd be looking at her. Nothing's going on really important, you know, but I'm just restless and irritable and discontent for some odd reason. It occurs to me that I don't need to be here, and she's ungrateful, and this is going on, and I get all wrapped around the axle, you know, and I start walking around that house, and I start touching things and cleaning things, and it's just not going away, and it's not working. And so I get in the truck, and I go 100 miles an hour to the meeting. You know, you probably go the speed limit, but I don't, you know, at that point, it's not that important. You know, and I'm 100 miles an hour down this dead end, this deserted road, and I get to the meeting sideways, you know, And I know enough to shut my mouth, you know, and sit in a truck, you know, not, you know, interact with people because I'm going to offend people. I'm going to say something I don't want to do, or, you know. So I shut up until about 5 seconds before the meeting, and then I slide into my chair, you know. And they read how it works and all that, and meet and greets, and they're just so wonderful, and I'm just fit to be tied, sitting there, you know, shaking. And then they call on me because they know I've been around AA for a long time. You know, and they don't know what's going on with me. They just think I have something to offer, and I'm like, great. You know, and so I don't share from my heart. You know, and I share straight from my head, because you didn't come from my heart. My heart's blackened sometimes. You know, you come for what was given to me, and so sometimes I got to just give it out of my head so I don't screw it up for somebody else. And at the end of that meeting, you know, I'm thinking, man, I'm going to cruise. I'm out of here. As soon as this Lord's Prayer, we're done, high five, and I'm out of there, you know. And somebody comes up to me and says they like what I said. I'm like, are you kidding me? Great, you know. You know, and I know what I got to do. I got to talk to them, or I got to listen to them, you know. And I don't want to do that, but I do it anyway because people are looking, you know. It doesn't matter how you get here or why you got here. The fact is, you're here. Motives don't mean nothing. You know, carry this message, it tells me. It says carry. Don't try to do anything. Do it. And I'm doing it, and I don't want to be doing it. But nobody asked me whether I wanted to or not. And at the end of that 3-4 hour conversation, you know, I get in my truck, and I'm not listening to the same insane music that I rolled up there in. You know, instead of Eminem, now it's some Mozart crap, you know. And I'm going 45 miles an hour, not even trying. Because that's the speed limit. That's the posted speed limit. I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just going home. And she's sitting there in the same spot that I left. You know, she ain't no different, but I'm different. Something inside me has been transformed by simply carrying this message, giving this stuff away, whether I want to or I don't, whether I feel like it or I don't feel like it. You think I want to be here on a Monday night? You're wrong. I've been here since I was 17 years old. This is not a place where I aspire sometimes on an everyday basis. It says I must do these things. Life has taken on a new meaning, you know, where others become more important than myself, where I think about others more times than I used to. You know, if it's 6 out of 10 times, that's more than it used to be when I got here. Tells me that to watch other people recover. I've seen people recover in this room and outside these rooms, the people that I sponsor that had no life just like I did. You know, their eyes are gray and dull, and their lip is hanging on the ground, and their butt's dragging 10 feet behind them, and they're just waiting to die like I was, you know, and to be able to convey this message, you know, to convey it to them the way it was done to me. You know, you might not like how I convey it. You know, I'm a little foul mouth, I'm a little direct, I'm a little I don't care how you feel kind of thing, you know, which I do, but I give it to them anyways, you know, and I watch them recover. And then I get excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. I see their loneliness vanish, and mine starts to vanish. You know, not before. I don't even notice it when it happened to me, when my sponsor took me through these steps. I didn't notice. I just knew that I better get to the meeting because he told me to get to the meeting. You know, I don't want to be late and get yelled at or embarrassed, you know, for showing up late. You know, to see a fellowship grow up. I've been a part of starting a couple different home groups out here, and you know, to see where they've gone to where we started them is amazing. You know, they're nothing like we had envisioned. They just took on life themselves, you know, and I don't go to those meetings because I don't like them. You know, but it's none of my business. It's none of my business. My job, like I was telling David, show up and deliver the pizza and go home. You know, not worry about how they're eating the pizza or what they're doing with it. My job is to be a pizza delivery guy and give it away, you know. So that's all I got for this one.
Thank you. So we're going to start over on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Okay. When I'm meeting with someone, it really, there's a couple of key questions I like to find out is, first, have they been in the program before, or is this their first time? And that kind of shows me sometimes where that's part of the general conversation, you know, asking questions like, if they've been in before, well, what happened, you know? And just really learning to listen. This has been, for me, an exercise and not so much trying to figure out somebody's character as to try to hear what they're saying to me. Because I know that for myself, when my sponsor, I always go back to my sponsor that I've worked with for a long time. A lot of times, I don't even know what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't put it into words, but she has the greatest ability to ask questions that get that to come out. And she did that for me. And then now I turn around and I can do that with other people. But I listen and listen and listen. And not so much listening to the circumstance. I had a person recently, and what I really came out of it was that no matter what was going on in that person's life, everything was wrong. It wasn't, you know, the husband's bad, the job's bad, the kids are bad, the where I live is bad. And then it's like, so when I turn around and give that back, I do exactly what this is said here. I turn around and I tell that person where I had those problems and how my drinking escalated because of the problems I had. I had a terrible husband, I drank at him, and then I found out that wasn't why I drank. You know, I turned it around, I talked about myself. I never moralize or lecture or give them any input on their life, because really, you know, when you're talking to someone, you're really only hearing one half of the story. And I know that from my own story, my version was much nicer and much more sanitized than anyone else's. So what I have to do is just hear what they're saying and be willing to go, okay, how can I relate that back to them? How can I feed that back? So that my question in here, it will say, it doesn't, and this isn't the right word, it says, at some point it will say, that if we can get them to get a person to think about their own drinking, if they can even start to question, because that's what happened to me. The questions that were asked, even though the answers I gave were the truth as far as I was concerned at that moment, I would go home afterwards going, was that really what happened? And then I might not talk about it for a year or two, but generally speaking, a light went on. You're like, boing, idea. That was not what happened. But anyways, if his mood is light, tell him humorous stories about your escapades. And I've always done that. And even when something's serious, I have a bad habit of turning it into something light or something funny. And it's a defense mechanism for me. But yet, I notice other people do the same thing. And so sometimes out of that, I'll hear something that will say, you know, you might want to ask about that. And I can remember asking someone recently a question, and they kind of looked at me like, how does she know that? It was like, because I did the same darn thing. I'm just hearing myself repeated in what you're telling me. And then to tell my experience, that's all I'm being asked to do here. I'm not being asked to come up with a story or some deep philosophical or psychological truth. I'm just supposed to tell my experience. And my experience was I almost drank myself to death. I came to AA, I got sober. And nothing else worked for me. I mean, it's really, you can narrow my experience down to like 5 sentences. I almost died. I came here and I'm alive. And it can happen for you. So, I mean, you laugh at it. You laugh at it, but it's really a pretty simple story. But yet, when I first was challenged to do this, I would break out in a cold sweat. It was like, what am I going to tell them? You know, because I was so used to telling people garbage. I mean, I would come up with these fantastic oratories on stuff that really had nothing to do with the truth. And the truth was, you know, I had doctors trying to send me here for years, psychiatrists and psychologists, and I kept leaving, and it kept getting worse. And then when I got here and I knew my life depended on it, it worked. So it's as simple as that. Thanks.
Right on. Am I supposed to introduce myself every time? Cool. All right. Yeah, I like the beginning of the paragraph. It tells me to see my man alone. You know, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 27 years, and I hear people tell me all the time, oh, you got to have a little buddy with you. You know, you got to go in pairs and droves and, you know, gangs, you know, to go and get them, you know. And I will tell you my experience as 17 years old when I got here, you know, don't come, you know, packing too deep, you know, because that looks to me like a fight. You know? And if you're the smaller of the two, you're going to get hit first, you know. Yeah, that's just the way it is. And that's kind of why, you know, I talked about it earlier on in the big book, you know, that it's not wise to think to get that guy in that bed or wherever he or she's at, you know, to feel like you're ganging up on him. You know, bring his wife and his kids and his grandma and his, you know, his preacher and all this stuff. It doesn't tell me to do that. It goes, I see him alone, if possible. You know, he's not going to, if I'm going to help this guy out, he's not going to do nothing to me. You know, if I'm in that kind of a position of being able to be a usefulness and helpfulness to this guy, that means I've already recovered. He's not going to get me drunk before I'm going to get him sober. I hear that. That's a lie. And if there's something that's causing you to feel like that, then there's something wrong with your spiritual condition. Therefore, I might not want to work with anybody and get right with my God first, you know, so I have something to offer. My first engagement, keep it light and fluffy. You know, I've talked to guys and gals in here at SARP, you know, and I'm talking, tell me how terrible life is right now. Just six gotta suck so bad for you right now. No. I'm like, I ask people all the time, I asked that guy with a beer right there. I said, what brings you Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? People love to talk about themselves. And they want to tell you, you know, and halfway through their conversation, they're going to figure out that they're lying. And they don't know what brought them to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so they're going to get confused and they're going to start to get quiet, you know, and become ready to listen. You know, not for me to interrupt and complete their sentences and tell them why they got here. Oh, you got here because you're hopeless and helpless and you've tried everything under the sun and you came here busted and disgusted. That does me no good. And that does that guy no good. It's about identification and getting them warmed up to feel like they can be a part of this. That's to what I've been taught. My sponsor looked at me dead in my face, you know, in 89. He said, what brings the Alcoholics Anonymous, slick? I'm like, I don't know. You know, probably the first honest thing I ever said in my life at that time. You know, I don't know what brought me here. I don't know why I'm asking you to sponsor me. You know, other than life sucks so bad, I can't stand it. And I don't want what I have. And I don't know what you got yet, but I know it's got to be better than what I got. You know, and he asked me what I've been doing. You know, and the funny thing is I don't know what I've been doing. I've been doing everything wrong, you know. The sunny side up eggs are on the wrong side. I'm buttering the wrong side of the toast every single time. The peanut butter and jelly are swapped and it just doesn't make sense, you know. I mean, it's just insanity, you know. He's encouraging me to talk so he can figure out, you know, either how dumb I am or how smart I am. You know, he should dumb it up for me a little bit or get a little bit smart, you know. To match his inconsistencies with my inconsistencies, to make me feel comfortable about, you know, going and following his directions. You know, it's about delivery, you know. If he's just smug and condescending, how useful is he going to be to me? Or how useful am I going to be to somebody else if I got all the answers? You know I got more answers than the new guy or gal coming in. I know how not to drink successfully. You know, but that does, you know, it tells me I'm not to moralize or lecture. I'm not there to moralize. I'm there to help. To be useful is my only aim. You know, am I being useful or am I not? It tells me to talk about, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly about my drinking. You know, to tell humorous stories. You know, I know a lot of guys in here that have been in the Army. Some have been in the Marine Corps. I talk to them about that. Nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but they feel comfortable. I don't know why they feel comfortable. They just do. You know, tell them about what my career looked like, you know, sober through my whole career. And then they start to feel comfortable about that. I know I did when my sponsor talked to me about he was in the Navy and I was in the Marine Corps. I'm like, oh, this guy might know what he's talking about. Doesn't mean anything, you know. So what? We're both in the military. That doesn't mean anything. It's just our jobs. But I felt confident and secure enough to follow directions, you know. He got me opening up was the point. You know, to talk about myself and how jacked up I was. It says, if he's in a serious mood, you know, put the screws to him. you know, push them down deeper, you know. What gets me willing is hopelessness. You know, if he's already feeling a little hopeless, make him feel hopeless worse, you know. That's what I read right there. Just dwell. That doesn't sound like it's a pleasant word, you know. So dwell on the troubles liquor caused you, you know, so that he or she can see how it's going to cause them if they haven't gone that far down, you know. So that's all I got right now.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 91. When you see, you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of the spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show from your own experience how the queer mental conditions surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic, but insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
When I was perusing through the rooms, I always said I'd been here before. I said, made it sound like I'd been here once, but actually people kept trying to send me here for years to AA. And what I always heard was, you know, that I had a problem that I couldn't fix. Well, by God, I'm a fighter. And you tell me I can't do something, I'm gonna prove you wrong. But anyways, what the people in the rooms did for me was they described themselves as alcoholic. No one ever told me I was alcoholic. I had a psychiatrist tell me I was alcoholic, had the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I fired him. You know, I'm not going back there, he's an ass. Who needs that? But AA never did that. But what they did do was they described themselves. The lady who's my sponsor today, I remember back when I came in 94, she talked about it, took me to meetings and met me at meetings and talked to me. And I drank again. And she asked me one question that had more impact on me than anything anyone else had ever said. She asked me if I'd been drinking, and I didn't lie. I said, yeah. And she goes, well, you're just not ready. And she hung up the phone. I'll tell you what, that got my attention. And I still remember it to this day as if that was that day that it happened, because it made me question what I was doing. And she chased me down and tried to coax me to come back in. She didn't do any of that. She just left me alone with me. And that's a darn uncomfortable place to be. And I got to see the strange mental twist, because from that point until I got here in 96, things went really bad, really fast. That gutsy person that can fix anything, give me enough time and I will get it. You know, I'll take care of the deal. I became a hopeless, completely hopeless alcoholic, drinking myself to death in my house. And I couldn't lie to myself anymore. That's the whole thing. If people will enable me a little bit, man, the lies will just flow. And if they buy into my, I'm drinking because I've got a bad life. That was mine for a long time. I did have a bad childhood, but not to the extent that I was drinking at it. But there's nothing in my life that was an excuse to be doing what I was doing, other than I love to drink. I love the ease and comfort that came from belting down a few. I wasn't afraid, and kind of like being social then, and I could work better. All these things I could do better if I was drinking, until all of a sudden one day I couldn't. And that little bit of information she gave me, it made me look at myself. Every time I got completely hammered by myself, and I had to go upstairs to go to bed to brush my teeth, so I look in the mirror, and I couldn't stand what I saw. Because it's like, at that point, you can't lie to yourself anymore. And the night I got sober, I was, I had that little bit of truth kind of stuck through to me. It said, you know, it's always getting worse. It's never getting better. You're going to die a pitiful old drunk if you don't do something. And I was out of some things to do. There was nothing else I could think of. So it's all sad stories. I came back to AA. I'm out of answers. I'll go to AA now. But that was, I can remember thinking, I am a real alcoholic. I cannot stop drinking no matter what. And it was a hopeless, feature of the malady. And the queer mental twist that happens, this is, the steps really started showing this for me, and I won't talk about a whole lot about that tonight, but I have seen over the years, when I'm talking to other people, especially early on when I'm talking about them, the mental twist is like, I'm hopeless today, but tomorrow I may go buy a ball gown and go to to an event. It's almost like the hopelessness doesn't last real long. You know, so if a person isn't hopeless, I just let them talk for a while and then see if they'll do some of the things we do. You know, that's like when someone says, call me. I thought they were trying to run my life, but they were trying to see how willing I was to do any of this stuff. We go to these meetings. We read this book. If a person won't do any of that, then I'm just talking to myself. You know, I'm just hearing myself talk, and there's nothing I can do. And I loved what my sponsor said, you're just not ready. And I can say that in my head without saying that to them. Usually what happens is if a person's not ready, they excuse themselves. You know, I got to go now. I'm not coming back. She wants too much. But I don't ever brand anyone alcoholic. And I've heard other people say, well, I think I can do this in my church. I can think I've got a great therapist. Never argue. I tried that early on a few times, trying to convince people, you know, sell them sobriety. Worst sales job you ever saw, you know. And it's not what I'm here for. God doesn't help me with that stuff. Now, he will give me the words to speak. If I'm speaking from my heart and giving someone my experience and trying to connect with them, he gives me all kinds of help. But if I'm trying to sell you a bill of goods, the rug gets pulled out for me pretty quick.
Thanks,
that's all I have.
Thanks,
Joe. Right on. I believe the same thing. You know, it's this thing sells itself. You know, don't do what we do, and keep doing what you're doing. See what happens. You know, and no greater motivator than that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, I came in '87, January 1st, and a chip on my shoulder, and you weren't going to tell me nothing. You know, I was new, and I knew everything, and I had no problem in smoking where I wasn't supposed to smoke and saying the things that I wanted to say and what were you going to do about it and, you know, just that attitude. And there was a lot of old people, you know. I was 17, they were 80. And what were they going to do? I mean, if I was 80 and I was seeing a 17-year-old talk to me, like, I'd be like, whatever, just burn up, you know. And that's exactly what they did. They let me burn myself up where the fight was no longer, you know. They didn't say, shut up, newcomer. They didn't say, sit down and learn to listen and listen to learn. They didn't tell me any of that stuff, you know, because that would have been like a green light, you know. It's good, let's go, you know. And they didn't. They said, we love you, Keith. Keep coming back. We know how you feel. Five greatest words I ever heard in AA. We know how you feel. And I'm like, whatever. You know, and 2 years later, I came, you know, I was still sober. I came begging on hand and foot, saying, uncle, you know, I'm done. And you know, they knew more about their condition than I knew about mine. They knew that they were sick and I was too. And they told me I didn't have to be like that anymore if I didn't want to. If I did what they did, I wouldn't have to do what I do. You know, when I met my sponsor, he looked at dead in my eyes. He says, you an alcoholic? I said, no, I'm a cross-addicted alcoholic. And, well, you guys heard that too? Yeah. So you know what he said? He said, what are you, addicted to crosses? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. I've been telling people 2 years about my cross-addicted alcoholism. You know, and I couldn't tell you where they met in 2 years. In 27 years, I can't tell you where they meet either. You know, I don't know if it even exists. You know, it's just special, it's different, it's not like you. I'm unique, but I'm not like you until I was ready. Until a man knew about his condition. You know, and where he was showing me all this stuff, you know, gave me his accounts of his struggles to stop. I gave him my accounts, you know, how I worked out and it didn't work. How I got a new girlfriend, that didn't work. Got an old one, kept the old new one, you know, that didn't work. Got a job, got a you know, got fired, got a job, quit school, went back to school. You know, all these things that I tried. Page 31 talks about that, you know, methods that I've tried. More physical exercise, you know, I'm going to be a tough guy in AA, you know, none of that satisfied. None of that satisfied because I still suffer from the queer mental twist that precedes the first drink. I still had this anxiety, turmoil, and tension that I needed to get squashed. And there was no amount of gals, there was no amount of working out, no amount of cars and jobs and going back to school and getting educated that was going to solve that problem. It works for about 2 weeks for a guy like me. And then I'm looking for the next thing, and then the next thing, and then I run out. And then I'm like, what do I do, you know? Read the first three chapters. You know, learn about more about alcoholism. Find out what a real alcoholic is. You know, a real alcoholic blacks out. Find that in the book. Where does it say that? I never blacked out once. I drank for 4 years. You know, hard 4 years. Never blacked out. I was too young to drive drunk, but I went to driver's ed drunk, you know. I did, and the guy was, you know, Frank back there. His name was Frank, you know, my instructor, and he smelled liquor on my breath. He says, go ahead and parallel park, Mr. Goulet, knowing that I couldn't. And he said, go ahead and shut her down. And I looked in his coffee. He didn't have coffee. He usually had brandy in it. I'm like, oh, great. He's not drinking today. And he smells my liquor. You know, Frank's now sober 29 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He sobered up that year. I'm like, great. You know? Held me accountable. If I'm convinced that the guy in my sponsor was convinced that I was a real alcoholic, that I wasn't a moderate drinker. I wasn't a heavy drinker. You know, I probably didn't drink like, you know, my friend Brad there. You drank probably cases and kegs, and David too. I don't know. You know, but I drank as much as I could and as long as I could. You know, and I drank way more than I intended on drinking. You know, when I wasn't drinking, I was uncomfortable and I was irritable and I didn't know what was going on. It seemed like people liked each other more than they liked me. And you talked trash about me until I walked in the room and then you just looked at me. You know, you were looking at me because I just walked in the room, but I figured you were talking about me. And then the Walmart greeter is just a little too personal when he asks how I'm doing tonight, you know. It's none of your business, that's how I'm doing, sir. You know? But I ain't got the guts to say that, and so I just give him a stern look, you know, and I just keep grabbing my cart and go, you know. And, you know, the condition that's, the thing that solves that problem is a drink, because I don't feel like that when I'm drinking. That's a real alcoholic. You know, a hard drinker, I guess you don't feel like that. You're just fine when he ain't drinking until it's time to take a drink, and he just drinks, you know, doesn't think twice about it. He's not fit to be tied when he ain't drinking, when nothing's going on, you know, but I am. I intend on drinking three or four at the party tonight, and I end up coming home 4 weeks later, you know. And I'm 16 years old. You got a 16-year-old? Anybody got a 16-year-old in this? What would you do if your kid, 16 years old, took off for 4 weeks? You know, you'd stroke out. I know I would. I got a 19-year-old. Panic, you know. I used to do it to my mom all the time. Not intending. I loved her, and I didn't intend on doing that to her. And I did it anyways because I had no choice. That's what a real alcoholic is. Has no choice. Goes where it takes him. You know, he knew I was. You know, and he says, dwell on that hopelessness. It's not going to get better. It's going to keep getting worse. It tells me to dwell again. You know, not a lot of happy things at this point, you know. You know, that guy or gal is probably not all that happy and wonderful. They're probably feeling it, you know, and they want to know that you feel it with them and you know how to get out of there. You know, show me what to do. I came, whatever my sponsor said, you know, the grass is blue and the sky is green. Yep, yes, sir. No argument. No argument. I didn't care whether it was or not. I was just following directions. Somebody was doing better than I was. You know, tells me to let him draw his own conclusions. You betcha. This is a self-diagnosing program. You an alcoholic or not? Oh, you're not? Oh, well, that's cool. You know, 2 years later, you show back up. Oh, I guess your diagnosis changed. You know? You didn't need me to do anything. You didn't need me to diagnose you for you. You know, you came up with your own conclusion. Great. Because why? Because at that point, I'm ready to do business when I draw my own conclusion. When I'm in the middle of the night and I can't avoid the topic that I am screwed 10 ways to sunset. You know, I will do whatever it takes, you know. So that's all I got right now.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
Okay, there's a lot there. The first part of it, the condition of the mind and the body, that's the obsession and the compulsion. You know, I'm obsessed with alcohol. When I'm not drinking it, I'm thinking about it. I'm getting over it. And then when I put it in my body, I can't stop. I mean, I was a hard drinker. I drank a lot. I did drink with Brad and David. Cases, bottles, huge, copious amounts. But that didn't make me an alcoholic. What made me an alcoholic was I couldn't leave the stuff alone. You know, I didn't want to leave it. I could tell I had a drinking problem or was alcoholic because when I don't drink, it's not a pleasant world to be in with me. You know, when they talk about what kind of thinking precedes the first drink, just look at me someday on a bad spiritual hair day, you know, and you're going to see the eyes of Satan come at you. And no one's done anything. It's just I can't stand it. I can't stand you. I can't stand my world. I can't stand me. Because I'm so self-focused. Alcoholics, they talk in our literature, different places, the selfish and self-centeredness. We have to be rid of it or it kills us. Well, I can't get rid of it. You know, that's the hopelessness of this thing. It's like, you know, if this was a Dale Carnegie course, we'd just talk you to you a couple hours, you'd go home and you'd be well. Or if I was a heavy drinker, I'd put the booze down and go live a lovely life. I put the booze down and things start happening. And they're not very pleasant. So the solution in here, that's what people want. They didn't come in and tell me, I've got a solution for your alcoholism. They started showing me what sobriety was. You know, it started by making a commitment to it. Can you not drink today? Oh yeah, I think so. I could try that. And I could, just one day at a time. Can you believe in a power greater than yourself? No, don't talk to me about the God stuff. Well, okay, will you just get on your knees and say some prayers? Well, yeah. And you wanna know how bad that is? I swear it was almost 2 years. I had this little yellow orange piece of paper. The third step prayer is on one side, the seventh step prayer is on the other. And I'm a pretty smart person. I could not memorize those. I was so resistant to this, so defiant to what people were telling me. I couldn't memorize them. My mind snapped shut. So every morning I would kneel down and read that piece of paper. And I'd read it to a wall and I'd say, we all know that that's a wall, but I'm gonna pray to you. And I did. And you know what happened when I was doing that? This is my experience. In about 60 or 90 days, I didn't want to drink. And I was plagued with it. I wanted to drink so bad when I got here all the time. I couldn't stand it. I'd go to 3 or 4 meetings a day just to get some peace. And I'd be so exhausted at night that I'd just kind of go into a deep sleep. I mean, I didn't even dream or anything. I just like, awake, dead, awake, dead. And I was pretty dead when I got here. But the living on spiritual principles, no one harped on that, except for to tell me, a spiritual principle might be if you don't do what you've been doing, and you come and do what we're doing. So, you know, if I'm fighting with everyone, I might want to not fight with them. That's a spiritual principle. You know, do something else. Read the book instead of running my mouth. And so it was introduced to these very slowly and very practically. It wasn't like I had to find a mountaintop and get right. I could just come to an AA meeting and stick my hand out, make coffee, help set up and take down. I mean, any of that was a spiritual for me because it was focusing my attention on something new. It was a willingness. And as that willingness, I was willing to do any of that, the light of reason could start shining in. And to me, that's God today. That little bit of a light that will come into my soul where I'll stop trying to destroy myself. You know, when you're someone my size, drinking a fifth to a quarter bourbon a day isn't healthy. And it didn't matter if I was mixing it with orange juice at the end. Because I knew I needed more vitamin C. So what had happened was, you know, if I would stop trying to destroy myself, a little bit of something else could get in. And this is an inside job. I come here, I surrender to the process. And the process is what heals me. And the process also gives me something to give back to someone new. And I know that today if I attempt to do that, I had to stop trying to walk on water, just try to stick my hand out to another drunk and say, yeah, I know how you feel. I've been there. I know what that's like. Come on, let's go this way. And sometimes people follow, they could be like me, and ran like the dickens until they were almost dead, and then went, well, maybe I'll come back. You know, sometimes we don't get to come back. That's the hard part about this. Thanks, that's all I have.
She's right, there is a lot in the section. You know, this is to continue to talk about it as an illness and a fatal malady. You know, my life wasn't getting any better just because I stopped drinking. It was getting worse. You know, the amount of suicide that I was thinking about at 2 years of sobriety was, you know, far more than it was when I first arrived at the rooms. At least when I was drinking, I had some relief from whatever it was that I didn't even know I had. And it talks about the body and the mind which accompanied it. You know, the body never occurs. You know, when the phenomenon of craving is what it's talking about, where I can't stop drinking once I start to drink. That never occurs if I never start to drink, but yet I can't keep the mind, you know, getting some ease and comfort for that because I've been trying all these things and they all seem to fail. They all seem to fail to fix my mind, you know, to fix my obsession, obsession beyond all human understanding. And I've been around a long time where I hear people try to describe it where it says in the book, beyond all human understanding. You can't, I just know I got it. I know something is wrong, that I can't seem to squash it. I try to use this, that, and the other thing to fix it. You know, like I described earlier on page 31, you know, gyms and occupations and thrill-seeking stuff and girls and cars and motorcycles and all these things, they don't seem to squash, you know, the mental part of it, which when the mental's not, you know, taken care of, then it gets the better of me, and then I do take a drink to quiet that stuff up a little bit. You know, just to take the edge off, just to slick the wheels up a little bit, you know, take the edge off of life, and it just slicks it right up, you know, where I start to drink, and all of a sudden, the body starts to kick in, where the phenomenon kicks in, and I can't stop drinking. Stopping drinking that much was not my intention. Just to sit back on a relaxed Friday night, watch some, you know, TV with my mom, and have a little bit of liquor on my breath, not too drunk, you know, was what I intended on doing. Yeah, but when it got in me, I couldn't stop. I could not stop, you know. People talk about that in AA that there's no sponsorship and no sponsees, you know. Well, okay, then you're a protege. You know, says it right there, you're a protege. You like that term? You know, let's quit getting wrapped around the axle about what's in Alcoholics Anonymous. You got sponsors and sponsees, you know. I got a sponsor and I'm his sponsee. You know, and that sponsee told me what his conception of God was. He asked me what my conception was. But he told me what his was, and his was kind, loving, understanding, and forgiving. I'm like, wow, that makes sense. You know, because at this point, you know, he didn't have to worry about offending me about talking about God. Not that anybody in AA ever did, because I didn't like the idea of God. They kept on talking about it left and right. You don't like it, we don't care. You came to us, we didn't come to you. You know? I'm like, well, that's pretty offensive. You came to my house and gonna tell me how to and dictate how I decorate. it's not going to happen, you know, and it didn't happen in their house. You know, they kept freely talking about this business of God. Made me uncomfortable. Why? You know, in my case, it was I knew there was a God and I wasn't living accordingly. You know, I did a lot of bad things in my life I didn't want to discuss. And I knew it was shameful and disgusting, you know, but my sponsor told me what his conception was. And he spoke freely about this stuff. And he asked me, he said, what is your conception? And mind you, it has to make sense. So I wanted to be a smart ass. It's a doorknob. You know, yeah. Does that really make sense to you, Keith? You got a job, you got a GED, and you're on your way to get a bachelor's degree. Does that really make sense to you? Or does that seem silly? It seems silly. He said, so what is God to you? And so I gave him an even sillier diagnosis of God. God is the sun and the moon and the stars and every stream, there I be, and other every rock, you know, there I am. God's name is I am. He goes, what the hell does that mean? I said, I have no idea. And I prayed that he didn't ask me the same question twice because I couldn't give him the same answer. I didn't know what God was. I didn't even know if I believed in God. I just knew I was in trouble. And so I adopted my sponsor's idea. That's it, because it made sense and mine didn't make sense. So if I be God-like, I'll feel godly. You know, I'm not going to be God, but I'm going to feel close to God by being kind and loving and understanding and forgiving than anything else that I'm going to do. It says in dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language. So I swear all the time to the people I sponsor describing my concept to God, you know, as to not offend them. If it offends you, that's okay. But this book protects my ability to convey that, you know, so that I don't arouse prejudice or suspicion that he might already have about spiritual terms, you know. And I tell you what, it works. It works for a guy like me and the people that I sponsor. And I don't clean up my language for anybody, but God seems to do that for me. Because I haven't cussed but once tonight. And I'm not even trying. It's not even something that I'm going after, you know. Mm-hmm. But God uses me in the ability that I allow him to, you know. So that's all I got for that one right there.
Page 94. We'll finish up with comments from the book for just a few minutes. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your intent to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions.
Okay, I'm going to be very quick with this because the phrase here that the more hopeless he feels, the better. You know, this isn't a sales pitch again. It's just, this is what I did. This is where I was. This is what happened. And this is what it's like now. And if you want it and you want me to help you with it, come on. If you don't, you know, then that's not, it's not, it's not even something you have to drill into somebody. You can tell pretty quick if a person wants to do what you've done. The last thing you do is argue with anyone. This is what I did. You don't have to do it. You know, there's a lot of people that don't do this. But I know that my life depends on it because I was a hopeless drunk. And I was on a one-way track to the wrong place. And I've been plucked out of that. And I've got a pretty good life today. So only a fool would want to throw that away. So I just try to be really honest, really direct, and really nobody does have to do it. But I'll help you if you do want to. I'll help you in any way I can. Thanks, that's all I have.
Thanks, Joe.
Awesome. You know, it tells me to outline the program of action. You know, that's the 12 steps. You know, my job is to to take somebody through the 12 steps as I was taken through, give them the opportunity that I was given to have this life that I have today. You know, exactly. If I haven't taken them, then I have no business in taking somebody through these things. You know, if I don't know precisely how I have recovered, how can I show somebody else precisely how to recover? I know exactly how I have recovered. I took these steps. I got hopeless, like it talks about at the bottom here. The more hopeless, the better. There was no fight in me. There was just simply to pick up the kit of spiritual tools and follow my sponsor wherever he told me to go. And thank God that he knew about the big book and these 12 steps, because he could lead me in that direction. His sole job was not to tell me who to vote for and what kind of car manufacturer to support and buy, you know, and who to date and who not to date and how much sexual escapade should and shouldn't be. You know, his job wasn't to do any of that. His job was to lead me and direct me through these 12 steps, you know, so that I could formulate a relationship with God, and God could do for me what I've never been able to do, give me the ease and comfort. He could squash this thing in my mind where the body wouldn't have to be affected anymore. Now, that was his sole job. And if I told my sponsor after he did all that stuff to, hey, you know, high five, thanks a lot, see you later, you know, this book protects that too, you know, protects that too. He has offered me, you know, and I gave him an opportunity to be a useful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the people that I've sponsored and took through the steps, you know, I don't sponsor all the same ones that I used to. You know, they've told me, hey, it's not working out, Keith, I'm moving on, blah, blah, blah. We're not married, you know. We're not married at all. Absolutely. You gave me the opportunity to carry this message, the privilege to carry a message, you know, to do my primary purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You give me that privilege. So what am I going to do? Get pissed off that you, you know, don't like me anymore, you fired me, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Maybe he helped me more than I helped that person. And I tell you what, I can't think about me and helping other people at the same time. I just not multitask like that. When you come first, I come second, or far down the scale. And that's the best that I can hope for in Alcoholics Anonymous, is not to be on my mind all the time. Sometimes I pray that somebody's going to call me so I could quit thinking about myself, because every other activity that I've tried has stopped. And my sponsor just recently told me, why don't you call them? It's a great idea. It's a great idea. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. See how you like it, you know? And, you know, I think that, you know, staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous without working with others is like playing Russian roulette. You know, it's only a matter of time. You know, it tells me that this works. That if I fail to perfect and enlarge my spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, I won't survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. You know, in all these years, you know, I've had certain trials and low spots ahead. And the only thing that has gotten me through it, the only thing, is working with others and getting close with God. Period. Nothing else that I've done. You know, so I'm grateful to be sitting up here with Miss Jill and you know, getting an opportunity to carry to you what was given to me, and hopefully it benefits you as much as it did me. If not, perhaps I made a friend. Thank you. Let me share.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to pass the seventh tradition baskets. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And I'm going to start off next week. We're going to finish up on step 12 here. And then the following Monday, which is November 3rd, this home group is going to have a supper and a speaker. The potluck supper starts at 6. The speaker starts at 7. It's Mike B. from Penrose, North Carolina. And that'll be right here in this very room. Are there any other AA-related announcements?
I'm not a holler, but I'm
David.
And Buster, with the Friday night Suffolk discussion group, personally out there this Friday night for like chicken and ham and a couple of great speakers. But now I've told you everything I know. Does anybody have the details on that? The Friday night Suffolk discussion meeting, and I assume they're meeting about an hour before the normal meeting time. Huh? 6:30. Yeah, Buster wanted everybody to come.
At 213 North Main Street, St. Paul's Episcopal Church. 6:30, yep.
Perfect.
This Friday, the 24th.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of the home group members after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hand? Thank you. And newcomers, y'all are, you heard tonight, one of the most important people sitting in the room. So is there anyone here that's in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you if you'd like to give us your first name.
Hi, I'm Joseph.
Hey, Joseph. Hello.
Hi, I'm Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
I'm Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic.
Jimmy.
I'm Joe. I'm an
alcoholic. Hey, Joe.
Anyone else? Okay.
The filler down there?
Yes.
John Paul, I'm an alcoholic.
John Paul.
And over here we have a literature table. There are pamphlets and books. The books are for sale. You can see one of us home group members after the meeting or see me. Pamphlets are free. And we have a sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have Evan and Judy. They're both going to be up here at the table after the meeting. They'll be available if you have any questions or want to ask them what a sponsor is. And I'd like to again thank Jill and Keith for sharing with us. Thanks to all who participated after the cleanup. We're all invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 12 discussed tonight. And we're going to have a meeting after the meeting at IHOP on 21st Street. So just head up the street after this meeting and continue our discussion on step 12. And I'd like for a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
My name is Lisa, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lisa.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who was still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer for those that care to join.
You too. Sorry, you come and
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,